I'm Joe Heim, the moderator for this debate this evening between the candidates for the Wisconsin Assembly, the 94th Assembly District, which includes virtually all the suburbs of La Crosse County. I'd like to welcome you all, and particularly the two candidates. On my left, the incumbent Steve Doyle of Onalaska, and his challenger, Republican Julian Bradley of Holman. Get that right. This debate is sponsored by the following groups: the La Crosse Tribune, WXOW News 19, WKBT News 8, WLSU, Wisconsin Public Radio, Leo Women Voters, and of course, University of Wisconsin La Crosse. On campus support includes the Joint Legislative and Regional Relations Committee, Political Science Department, the Faculty Senate, the Student Association, the Academic Staff Council, and the University Council. I'm going to introduce the panelists, and they'll be asking most of the questions tonight. We do have a couple of questions from the audience as well. The panelists from WKBT, Martha Kolaski; from WXOW, Dustin Lutke; from the La Crosse Tribune, Jordan Vion; WLSU, Hope Kiron; Legal Women Voters, Catherine Kolkmeyer; and WISM, Drew Kelly. Okay? Give them a round of applause. The format tonight is going to be relatively informal. The debate format: opening statements of 2 minutes for each candidate, and I believe Steve Doyle is going to go first, followed by questions and answers from the panel, and I'll mix in a couple questions from the audience as well. Each candidate can respond to the other person if they so desire, as long as we know when we want to do that. When we get close to the end, we'll go into closing statements of 1 minute each, and we'll be pretty well timed at about 58 minutes. The timekeeper tonight is Mary Nugent from the Legal Women Voters. So thanks for being here, Mary. Okay, one other thing. Please turn off your cell phones if you haven't already done so. And please refrain from clapping, cheering, or throwing things at the candidates that wouldn't be appropriate. So please provide a hearty welcome for the two candidates. Steve Doyle is going to do the first introduction.
Okay. Unlike the presidential debate, Julie and I actually shook hands about 5-10 minutes ago, so we're cool. It's no surprise that we're in a very polarized environment politically these days, at almost every level of government. And that is something that for my entire political career, especially the last decade or two, I've really tried to change. And for me, when I talk about bipartisanship, it actually goes back to an earlier concept when I was county board chair for almost a decade, where we referred to it as collaboration. We tried to work together to get things done, and a couple examples of that were things like the Household Hazardous Materials Program. Within the first few months of becoming county board chair, I sat down with members of every municipality in our county to put together that program, which has been a very valuable program and used by our citizens for the last decade and a half. Toward the middle of my tenure as county board chair, I got a phone call from the folks at Select Trusses saying, "We might have to move out of the county because we need to expand and there's not a place for us to do that." So I worked with Select Trusses, LADCO, the Village of West Salem, La Crosse County, and our local utilities to create the West Salem Business Park, which has created over 100 family-supporting jobs already. When I went to Madison, I said, you know, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to take the spirit of collaboration, we'll call bipartisanship, and I'm going to try to do that in Madison too, and I think I've been very successful. I have been able to pass a couple of bills during my time that I was there. I've been able to work very closely with my Republican colleagues, and I think that the symbolic thing that I've done that a lot of people notice is that for the last couple of terms, I've co-sponsored the same number of Democratic and Republican bills. Not that there's anything magic about that, but it sends the message that, you know, not everybody believes that the Democrats have all the right answers or the Republican have all the right answers. Quite honestly, not all of them have the wrong answers either. And so I've tried to set that tone, and that's what I want to continue to do over the next 2 years.
Thank you, and thank you to all of our hosts and our sponsors. Thank you to everybody for giving up this Tuesday evening to be here with us. For those of you that I haven't had the privilege to yet meet, my name is Julian Bradley, and I'm a Western Wisconsin guy. I grew up here. We moved here when I was 11 years old, so in that amount of time, I do consider myself a Western Wisconsin guy. I went to middle and high school here. I'm a proud graduate of Central High School, class of 1999. Go Red Raiders. And as part of that, I didn't get to go to college right away after high school. Instead, I went right into the workforce, and I pursued other goals. I decided that college right away wasn't what was meant for me. I ultimately entered the workforce, and I've been employed by the same telecommunications company here in town for just shy of 12 years, where I manage a team of associates. I'm seeking this office and hoping to earn your vote because I'm an optimist. I was raised by my mom, a single parent, and we lived below the poverty line. There were times financially when things were very difficult for us, but we didn't focus on how bad things were. We focused on how good things could be. That's the kind of vision that's necessary to represent the 94th District in Madison. My desire to get involved in the community led me to being involved with the Republican Party. Many of you recognize me from my time as chairman of the Republican Party. You see, growing up, I always believed that if you had a vision, and if you believe that there's something that you can do better, then you gotta give it a shot, you gotta go for it. And in the Republican Party, I believed that I had a vision that would make things just a little bit better. My goal was to turn us from just being a political organization into being more of a community organization. Under my leadership, we got involved in the Polar Plunge. We got involved in ringing bells for the Salvation Army. We've done a number of other things, including the Thanksgiving Day dinner. And we also worked, I worked bipartisan on a Toys for Tots drive. Those are the reasons that I've gotten into this race. I want to do what's best for our district. I want to take that to Madison. And I want to do what we can to keep our state moving forward.
Thank you very much. First question comes from Martha Kolaski from WKBT. It goes to Steve Doyle.
First, then, you know, we've been reporting over the last couple of days that the UW system has $2 billion of backlog projects. So in the state of Wisconsin, how does it maintain its campuses? How will it grow those campuses with that those kind of numbers we're talking about, and still try to find a way to make a college education more affordable?
That, obviously, in this venue here tonight is probably the most important question that can be asked and answered. And my response is multifaceted. Number one, the Board of Regents has already submitted a proposal talking about needing an additional $42 million to help its budget in the next biennium. I support that because in my role as County Board Chair, I discovered that, you know, the people who know the most about what the needs of an organization are the frontline people, the people who are doing the job, the people who are there every day. So when the chancellors and the members of the Board of Regents say, we need more funds, I take their word that they're not just inventing those figures. But secondly, I think we also need to make tuition more affordable. And, you know, we've had a tuition freeze for the past several years. We have a tuition freeze again, at least for one more year, possibly after that. I think that we need to look at not just the cost part, but how you get the money to pay for that. And when I was here at UWL, I graduated with very little student loans. It's not that kind of a luxury anymore where people can go through 4 years of college and graduate without significant student loans. So I think that we need to make it more affordable by increasing the amount of student aid that is available, both in terms of grants and in terms of loans. And also we need to talk about allowing people who have graduated to refinance those loans, just like we can refinance a car loan or a home mortgage, so that we can reduce that interest rate. So there's a number of different things that we can do. It's not one answer, it's multiple answers.
Okay, thank you.
In the time that I graduated high school in 1999 to when the tuition freeze took effect, the cost of attending college, especially here at the UW system, went up over 100%. 100%. For people that oppose the tuition freeze, I think that's a staggering fact that will allow them to realize we needed to do something. We needed to do something to help the students and help the middle-class families that were trying to pay back this student debt. Now, if we're going to continue on, and as Steve mentioned, it sounds like at least one more year of the tuition freeze, and is potentially to go on to 2 years, but if we're going to continue on in that frame, then we need to do something that will allow the university a little more freedom to recoup the money that they need in order to operate. We know that there is a shortage. We've acknowledged that. We've heard that. And the tuition freeze, while great, and it's done great things for slowing down the growth rate of tuition, it is something that the university is going to need some freedom in order to get their money back, and they're going to need to be able to do that if it comes from raising tuition or if it comes from raising fees, but they need the freedom to be able to operate. So I do agree that we need to make sure that the university system is able to operate, because this is an investment. We want people to go to school here, and upon graduation, we want them to find a great paying job here that will allow them to stay in our region.
Okay, thank you. Next question comes from WXW Dustin Lukey and goes to Julian Bradley.
Staying on the topic of education, number of referenda on the ballot in the area, including one in West Salem. La Crosse School District's also reporting lowering school taxes due to an increase in school funding from the state this year. What role would you like to see the state government play in K-12 education?
Yes, thank you. I made a commitment early on, and I got to bring this up at West Salem High School where we had a debate. I think it's important for people to understand that we need to, in Wisconsin, further invest in education. And as part of that, I've made a commitment that in the next budget as an assemblyman, if there is not an increase in funding for K-12 education, I will vote against that budget, period. That is my commitment as your next assemblyman for the 94th District. We have to see an increase in that funding. In order to do so, we have to have people that are willing to go to the table, that are willing to talk to all of our legislators, not just the Republicans, but the Democrats, come up with a budget, come up with a formula, and make sure we have more money coming into the system. Investing in education is investing in Wisconsin. And I stand with our educators, I stand with our students, and I believe that we need to do that. That's what's best for Wisconsin.
In my role as state representative, I talk with our local superintendents on a very regular basis to find out what the impact of what we're doing in Madison has upon their schools. And what they told me is, you know, we've cut the fat, we've cut the muscle, now we're down to cutting the bone, and we just can't do that any further. In this last budget, there was an increase in the school aids for our schools across the state. The problem is that when the state put more money into that fund, they didn't change the rules in terms of what the schools could do with it. So what happened is a lot of our schools were at the top of the revenue cap. So they got more money from the state. That didn't mean they had more money to spend for students or teachers or classrooms. What it meant was that they had to lower the property taxes, which is a good thing in and of itself, but it didn't add any more money to the schools. And so if you're going to talk about an increase in funding for schools, you also have to talk about a loosening of that revenue cap. And I think that, again, as I talked about the Board of Regents and our chancellors, our superintendents, our school boards, our faculty at the K-12 educational facilities are the ones that we should be listening to in terms of what their realistic needs are and their realistic solutions to resolving the problems that face our lack of funding for education at this point. One last comment I want to make is I support the various referendum questions that have been proposed, but we have to realize that when a referendum passes, that money is replacing money that the state would have sent using income taxes, sales taxes, and so forth, but replacing that purely with property taxes. That is the state shifting the burden onto our schools, and that's not fair.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Next question comes from Jordan Byatt from La Crosse Tribune.
Staying on the education topic, are you concerned about teacher shortages in rural schools, and what role do you think the state has in addressing and helping solve that problem?
Well, we have had a rural schools task force that had looked at that issue and came up with the conclusions that it's overall a teacher shortage statewide, actually nationwide, but it has special effect in the rural areas because they tend to be the lower funded schools, and so with what Scott Walker refers to as the free agency that our teachers have now, a high quality teacher is going to get bought off by a high funding school district, which is probably an urban school district, and so they're going to go there and they're going to leave the rural school district. So we need to provide some incentives for our teachers to stay in the rural area. First of all, we need to get teachers into the profession again. We need to improve those ranks at this point. But incentives for our teachers, such as assistance with paying their student loans, other incentives to keep them in the school district. We also have to maintain the quality of our rural school districts and make people want to teach there. We need to increase broadband, for example, in our rural school districts. We need to increase technology in general in our rural school districts. So it's a part of a package, but in terms of the teachers themselves, getting more teachers into the profession and staying in the profession and encouraging them to go to the rural areas.
Thank you. Julian?
Yes, that is, you're right, it is part of a package, and it's called the Rural Wisconsin Initiative. That came up in our last session that addresses a lot of those issues, and I didn't see that you had signed on to any of those. Those bills are sponsored by Republicans. those bills you've had an opportunity to take action on. I think they would be very popular if we had some leadership in Madison. That's why I'm running, folks. I want to provide that leadership. I'm willing to sign on to the Rural Wisconsin Initiative because we recognize, we understand, there is certainly a shortage in teachers in rural Wisconsin. We need to expand broadband access because if we want to have students and professionals able to compete on this global market, they need access to broadband. So those are things that are all tied up in the Rural Wisconsin Initiative. We need to do more to attract teachers. We need to make sure that we can get them out into rural Wisconsin so that they can provide the quality of education that the people out here deserve and that they've become accustomed to by living here in our great state.
I don't want to get into the gotcha game, but that's really what that is all about. The Rural School Initiative had a lot of good ideas, and then, you know, like some of the Democratic ideas that we put out that are really popular, and then what do? We attach to them. Well, let's take the Medicaid money to fund it, which is something that the Republicans absolutely hate. And so, you know, we know that we can say, well, you didn't support that, and of course their answer is, well, because we didn't support one part of it. Same with the Rural Schools Initiative. There are things in each of those that we didn't like that didn't mean that we didn't like the bathwater that we're throwing the baby out with. It's just there's a portion of it that was significant to us that we couldn't support, but we support rural schools, and many of those same ideas that were in that package were in our package, which I did support.
Thank you. Next question comes from WFU Hope Kirwan and goes to Julie Bradley.
Transportation funding continues to be a heavily debated issue in our state. Do you think the Department of Transportation is getting enough support? And how do you think funding for road projects should be addressed?
Yes, transportation funding is probably one of the things we've talked about amongst the most in this entire process. Look, for too long, we in the government have kicked the can down the road on transportation funding. And if we keep doing it, it's likely to get lost in a pothole somewhere. We need people that are ready to stand up and are ready to say, okay, here's what we need to do with funding our transportation. First things first, there's an audit that's been called for of the Department of Transportation. Hopefully we'll see the results very soon. I believe all options have to be on the table. The last thing I'm in favor of is just running right away and saying, all right, let's just raise the gas tax. I think that needs to be a last resort. There needs to be an offset if, in fact, we do have to raise that gas tax. What we need to do is try to make sure that we're spending more money on maintenance and less on overhead. That's a problem that we have in our Department of Transportation right now, and I believe that's going to continue to be brought to light once this audit is concluded. My opponent wants to raise the gas tax. I disagree with that. I don't think we should go right into the people and say, give us more of your money. That's hit and run politics. Hit up the taxpayers and run away with their money. I'm not in favor of that. I don't want to see that. I think we need to be responsible. We need to make sure that we're fixing the roads that we have. It's a staggering statistic that only 16% of the DOT budget goes into local roads. That's the roads around here. That's the roads in the 94th District. We need to increase that portion.
Thank you. Steve?
Transportation funding is broken at this point, and I certainly support the idea of the audit to figure out where we can make things run more efficiently and most appropriately target the funding that we have. But we have a $1 billion shortfall in our roads funding at this point, and there's not an audit in the world that's going to come up with $1 billion in the state budget for transportation. We are going to have to do something, and what we should not do is the approach that was done last time, which was to put it all on a credit card. That's not the way that you fund roads. What you need to do is to come up with a realistic approach to that. I've talked with a lot of my local businesses, the Quick Trip people, for example, that put 1 million miles on their vehicles per year and know what those roads are like. And all of my local businesses are saying, we would be happy to pay more money in gas tax. We don't want toll roads. We don't want to have people, you know, gouged with it, jacking up the fees and registrations and so forth. But the gas tax, the best thing about that is that it's not just us paying for it. It's those people from Minnesota and Iowa and those crazy drivers from Illinois that are driving on our roads. They should be helping to pay for them. And that, what more fair way than to have the people who are using the roads pay for it? You know, as a county board member, I can tell you that in La Crosse County, we have $61 million of identified current road needs that we have in La Crosse County on our county roads alone, and we're only able to spend $2.4 million. $61 million of need, $2.4 million per year that we're able to spend. Those numbers don't add up. It's not going to work unless we get more assistance from the state.
Okay, next question is going to go to Steve Doyle. Comes from Catherine Cookmeyer, League of Women Voters.
Thank you. The Wisconsin League of Women Voters supports the establishment of an independent commission or an agency that would be responsible for developing a nonpartisan legislative redistricting plan. Would you support such a commission, and would you please share your thoughts on that idea?
Absolutely. I supported it every session that I've been in the legislature. The Iowa plan is essentially what you're talking about, Catherine. And what it does is it takes that out of the hands of politicians, because the people who have the most at stake are not the ones you can trust to draw the lines that are the most fair. And so in that respect, what I would like to see is a constitutional amendment so that we can't just say we favor a commission to do this, and then once we get into power, we say, oh, you know, we changed our mind. Now we think that we're going to just do it ourselves. So I have committed and will commit in public that I will not only support it, I will co-sponsor a constitutional amendment to require us to have a nonpartisan commission handle redistricting, period.
Bradley?
Yes. I'm glad this question's coming up already, because we're getting pretty close to the next census. So it's great to start tackling these things before it's last minute and it's, well, let's just leave things the same. I actually do favor that as well. I think it's a good idea to have a nonpartisan group take a look at our redistricting. I don't see a real problem with that. I'd love to take the politicians out of it and let a group that can sit down with a map and say, okay, this is what's most fair. Let's give it a crack.
Next question comes from Wisdom's Drew Kelly.
What more can be done at the state level to combat the opioid abuse and problems that have been plaguing most of the state, including La Crosse County?
Sure. That's a key component to my campaign and my platform, is we need to make sure that public safety remains a top priority, and that definitely goes to the opioid epidemic. Where that starts, upon talking to either the Attorney General or anybody that's really involved with these things, you find that this was led from prescription drugs, prescription drug use and abuse, which then led to the opioid abuse. We need to make sure that, first of all, right here in this great institution, I had a teacher, former mayor of La Crosse, John Mettinger, and he taught something that I took to heart with me, which is we don't lock up the people that we're mad at, we lock up the people that we're afraid of. And I think we need to make sure that we're not just taking the victims of addiction and locking them up and penalizing them. We need to try to rehab them and get them back out into society so they can be productive members. Next, we need to go to the sources. We need to get the funding necessary. We need to go to the DOJ, speak to the Attorney General, and make sure that our local police departments and our team at the DA's office have the resources necessary to combat these things. So we can go to the sources, find the people that are putting all of these drugs into our community, and get them out of here. We need to have, and we deserve to have, a safe and stronger community here in Western Wisconsin.
The issue of drug abuse and related crime has been one that I've been interested in and working on for quite a number of years. When I was on the county board, when I was county board chair, I was a member of the Criminal Justice Management Council, and that's where that phrase comes from. You lock up the people that you're afraid of, and you essentially kick the butts of the people that you're mad at, rather than spending tax dollars for jail time. And so we tried to look at what is not only the solution when they're committing crimes, but how do you prevent people in the first place from getting addicted and committing crimes? I was a co-sponsor of a number of the bills that were part of what we called the HOPE package, relating to heroin and opioid abuse in Wisconsin. They were initiated by John Nygren, one of the co-chairs of the Joint Finance Committee, after his daughter had some very serious issues with drug abuse, and he saw what that need was, and he brought forward some very common sense, very bipartisan ideas to deal with that, that looked at things that would make it more difficult to get yourself hooked in the first place. In other words, have a better reporting system so that if you go to Dr. A to get a prescription, and then you go to Dr. B, and then you go to Dr. C, and you go to a number of different pharmacists, now we're going to find out that that's going on, and we can track you, and we can intercede before you get too far down the line and get, you know, hooked to the point where you're now engaged in a life of addiction and drugs. So there are a number of bills that passed two sessions ago, a number passed this last session, and there's some more that are coming up in this future session where we're getting a better and better handle on the ways to try to tackle it, to more in the way of prevention rather than picking up the pieces after the fact.
Okay, thank you. Next question comes from the audience, from the Student Association. And goes to Steve Doyle. If elected, what specific measures would you take to fight for university students in the upcoming biennial budget?
Well, the One issue that we have talked about in my caucus, the Democrats have put forward the proposal called the Higher Ed Lower Debt Proposal. And that's a package of things that would really benefit students who are here today and who graduate and have student loans to pay back. One of the key components of that, of course, is what I had mentioned earlier, which is being able to refinance your student loans. A lot of people have student loans right now that are at, you know, 6, 8, even 10% interest, when that's not the going rate for interest these days, but they're prohibited from being able to refinance those bills to lower their debt payment. We also want to include a component that has to do with financial counseling. I know, because I was in this situation many years ago, that, you know, it's easy to take out student loans, it's easy to get them, but they always want them back, and that's the tough part. And so we need to sit down with students to talk about what can you really afford, looking at the type of career that you're going into and the cash flow that you would expect to have. We're also looking at things that would allow students to work in paid internships and things like that that are going to benefit students while they're on campus, but also provide some skills for them to immediately get into the job market after they graduate. So there's a lot of neat things that can be done, and this is an issue that both parties have had suggestions, but again, each party seems to put poison pills in each of their ideas. If we pull those poison pills out and we come up with some common sense things that we all agree on, I think that we can make some progress in making college more affordable for students.
Thank you. Ms. Bradley?
One of the things that I absolutely agree with from the college affordability bills that came out in the last session involved lifting the cap on how much you can write off from your student loan payments, your interest payments on your taxes. That was a big one. Another thing that I certainly agreed with was the ability to be able to have colleges have to send notices to students, so to most of you, which are our students here in this room, letting you know how much debt you've incurred, how long it's going to take to pay back, and the interest rates, etc. Those are two things that I certainly agree with. I believe they should go through. And Steve, I don't know where the poison pill is in either of those, but you did vote against certainly lifting the cap, and it didn't, you know, it came through the assembly, but you did vote against it. College affordability is a big deal to me. I was a non-traditional student that only graduated recently, so I'm going to be paying back student loans for quite a while. I want to make sure that I have a chance to refinance my loans, but I also would love to be able to deduct a little bit more of that interest rate on my taxes, because as somebody that is middle class and that does work for a living, that helps me out quite a bit, and I think it'll help all of you as you enter the workforce.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. Next question comes from Martha Kolaski. Goes to Julia Bradley.
Mr. Bradley, can you tell me, with the premiums for the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, expected to sharply increase again by at least some 25%, it has a lot of people worried. Some states are choosing to try to deal with it on their own. Is there anything you think the state of Wisconsin can do to make sure that health care stays affordable?
One of the things that I think we did right was not taking the Medicaid money. We've seen, even Governor Mark Dayton right across the river has said, and he's come out and said, Obamacare is not affordable. He's Democratic governor of Minnesota has stated it's not affordable. Now we're seeing that the premium costs are going to continue skyrocketing, and it's not just for folks that are in the exchanges. I work for a company here in La Crosse, in downtown La Crosse. I have people that work for me. Right now, it's open enrollment time. Last year, when I first started thinking about getting into this race, I had to sit down with employees and talk to them about the fact that their health insurance costs continue to skyrocket. They're concerned, and they're looking for anybody that can help them come up with a budget. So we go over that, and you see how much more healthcare keeps going up. You add in healthcare, you add in daycare, you add in a mortgage. Then you start adding in all the other costs of living, and you realize it's not sustainable for anybody in the middle-class tax bracket. Obamacare has been a burden. It's hurt our economy, and it's hurt the people of the state of Wisconsin. We have been very lucky. I'm glad we didn't take the Medicaid money. Some people have suggested that's free money. We all know there's no such thing as free money, especially from the government. That's taxpayer money, and we should not have taken that money. I'm glad that we didn't. What we need to do is we've actually increased, we're one of the only states to turn down the money and still increase coverage under Badger Care, which was a great win for the state of Wisconsin. And we need to make sure that we keep looking for solutions such as that to make sure that we can try to bring down that cost of health care, because that's a major concern, not just in our state, but across the country.
Well, one of the areas that we very definitely disagree is on the idea of taking the Medicaid money. And I wouldn't call it free money, but I would call it our money. It's money that we paid to the federal government that if we don't get it back by joining Obamacare or some variation thereof, it's money that's going to go to California or Florida or New York or wherever. But that is our money that we should be able to get back. You know, people say, well, you know, if you sign on to that, you're stuck. Well, it really doesn't work that way, because the way that Obamacare works with the state joining Obamacare is that you say how long you want to stay in. They will give you, starting with 90% of the cost of what it takes to run the program, they will give that to you, and it will decrease a little bit over the course of time, and you get out whenever you want. If you want to get out this year, you get out. If you want to get out next year, you get out. But until you get out, you get this money that is our money that we sent to Washington that it would then come back to us. You know, people are very concerned, and that's a really important topic right now at the federal level, about the premiums going up. The part that's not getting the coverage, though, is that the subsidies are there, too, so that the increases in the premiums for modest income people are being offset by the subsidies that are there. It's not a perfect program. The Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton, has said, you know, I see problems with Obamacare, too. We need to fix some of these things, but we can't get rid of the whole program that has good things like keeping students on until you're age 26, on your parents' coverage, and things like that. So we do need to work at improving it, but I still think that there's a lot to build upon there to make it a good program.
Just less than a week ago at West Salem High School, you did call it free money. You were exactly who I was quoting. You said, quote, it is free money, we should take it. I disagree with that. I can think of other things we can do with excess tax dollars, like give them back to the people instead of just letting the government continue to take them. Healthcare is going to continue to be a major debate. Regardless of who wins any of our elections, we all need to be able to be taken care of. We all have to pay for healthcare. We have to find a way to make sure that we're able to contribute into our society, and we need to be healthy to do so. Healthcare is very important, and I look forward to getting into the Assembly and talking about what we can do to help Wisconsin continue to be covered.
Well, I would love to give that tax money back to the people who paid it, which are people from Wisconsin, for example, but that isn't how it works. Neither of us is running for a federal office. We have no control over what's going to happen with that federal money. So if we don't take it, it will go to another state. It will not come back to the taxpayers. And in that respect, it is our money. We should get some benefit from our money.
Next question comes from Dustin Lukey. Goes to Steve Doyle.
Unemployment, excuse me, jobs numbers just came out. Unemployment in Wisconsin dropped to its lowest level since 2001, but the private sector also lost 8,500 jobs between August and September. How do you work to keep people in the district gainfully employed?
Well, I had a bill that was the only bipartisan jobs bill that passed in last session, not this session. It was the Workforce Advancement Training Grant Bill program that reworked an existing program that we had without spending any additional money, but targeting it toward people who were displaced from their current job, such as by a factory closing or a problem like that, and targeting them into high-demand jobs. Welding is the example that we hear a lot, but there's other ones, too, and we've already found people in La Crosse area to get a benefit from that. So that's one of the things that we do to try to match up the demand with the supply. So many of our people who are looking for work these days have the wrong skill set. They're very talented, they're very hardworking, but they don't have the skills or the training for the jobs where the employers are looking to place them right now. So we need to do a better job of that, and I've worked very closely with our tech school in that respect, because they really have their hand on the pulse in terms of knowing what our local employers are looking for. I think that just making Western Wisconsin a place, a destination place where you want to work, you want to raise your kids, you want to send them to good schools, that will keep people in the area who then are the both employers and employees for the future.
Thank you.
One of the key things that's started emerging, most of us have heard of the Silicon Valley before, where it's where all the tech companies got their startups, and they were able to grow and run many of the things that we have on our devices and we see on TV and things like that. What's emerging now is something called Silicon Prairie. And what that is these tech companies are expanding into smaller communities, such as what I believe a great destination would be the 94th District. It would be wonderful to have these companies come into our district, come into our area, and have jobs, very good paying jobs, for all of our people to take. This is a great university. We have a great technical school here, and I think it would be wonderful if we had jobs that could continue to accommodate those people. I think it's great news that our unemployment has dropped to the level that it has. We have a lot of work to do, but that's a phenomenal drop. And I think as long as we continue the work to attract companies, to get regulations off of their back, to get taxes lower so that we can have those jobs here, we'll be able to continue to see growth.
Next question comes from Jordan Bayan, goes to Julian Bradley.
Hi, both of you mentioned broadband expansion. The governor has allocated $3 million toward broadband expansion. Do you think that that goes far enough? Do you think that that was a good decision? How do you feel about that?
I certainly believe that it was a good decision. As I mentioned a little while ago, broadband expansion, we have to have broadband in our rural communities in order to ensure that they can compete on a global market. If you go to any farms, for example, you'll find that the old days of the farm being just people going out and doing all the chores are long gone. They now have computerized systems and they have networks. It's really a quite technical operation going on out there. And then with broadband, we need to make sure that everybody has broadband, and we want our students to have broadband as well. We want our students to be able to compete. We want them to be able to learn and see other cultures, learn from the people in other states and other countries, be able to connect. There's nothing like being able to connect with somebody as part of the learning and development process. So we want to ensure that that's available to them. I think the Rural Wisconsin Initiative, which I mentioned earlier, does cover rural broadband and the further expansion. I fully support that, and I look forward to working on it.
I think that when we look at what we define as infrastructure these days, it's not just things like roads and sewer and water. It also includes internet connectivity, because that is really the commerce of today that so many people depend upon. You know, when I look around the room here, you know, if I talk, use the term dial-up, students' eyes glaze over. They have no idea what I'm talking about. But those of you who are my age know what dial-up is like and how long it took to download that article that you wanted to read or that website that you wanted to get to. That is what many people in the rural area are still doing to connect to the internet today. That is a recipe for disaster when it comes to economic development. You cannot compete in the global marketplace, which is where we're all at today. You cannot compete in the global marketplace using dial-up. You need to have broadband, and that is no longer something that should be just for big companies or people who live in the city. That is something that really is a necessity for economic development. So I support it. The $3 million, it was a start. It doesn't get us as far as we need to go, but it's a start.
Next question comes from Hope Kierwatt and goes to Steve Doyle.
What condition do you think the current state budget is in, and what are your top priorities for spending in the next state budget?
Well, the report that just came out the other day said that we have a surplus, but then I've seen some people following up saying that, you know, we don't really know yet because there's still further numbers that are going to come in. In terms of the future, what we're doing in the area of education and the area of transportation is not sustainable. Let me talk about the second one first. We, as I said earlier, can't continue to put roads on a credit card. We're going to need to come up with a sustainable, realistic approach to funding transportation, not just at the state level, but to assist our local governments in meeting their transportation needs. With regard to education, again, talking with my local superintendents, they tell me that what we're doing today is not sustainable. The referendums that we're seeing out there, not always just doing things like building new sports stadiums or a new classroom building. In a lot of situations, what we're seeing those referendums cover is operating expenses. In other words, paying the bills to keep the lights on in the school, paying the teachers, and so forth. And so in that regard, we have to do better at funding our schools. And part of that is simply giving our school districts the discretion on how they can handle their budgets. when I'm a state representative, I run into people all the time, you know, at the grocery store and so forth, but I don't run into people as often as the school board members who have to explain to their constituents why their schools are either not doing as well as they could be or why their school taxes are going up. So those are the people who are on the front line who are in the best position to say, this is what we need and here's how we plan to meet it. And we need to respect that.
Thank you. Julian?
Yes, I think the estimated surplus in the budget, again, that's a great thing because that's less cutting we have to do. That's more money that we can put into other places, such as education. I made this commitment in West Salem. I've made it in talking to people. I've made it here today. A top priority for me is making sure we see more money into our education. We all saw what happened during Act 10. And a lot of people, especially Republicans, were told that we hate teachers. And no matter how many times I try to tell people, that couldn't be further from the truth. I got a great public school education. I learned and I realized actions speak louder than words. And that's why there's nothing more important to me than making sure that I show the teachers in our district, I show the students in our district, I show the parents in this district that we stand with the educators. We stand to benefit most by an educated society and an educated community. I want to see more money going into our K-12 education. I will vote against a budget that does not have an increase in K-12 education. Transportation is a top priority. I do not favor a gas tax first. I have said, I'm on record, that I'm open to all options, but we need to make sure we get the results of that audit before we rush into asking for more money, because we don't want to ask for more than we need. What happens when the government does that? They just keep asking, and they put it into other places. We want to take care of what we need to take care of. That's why I favor the way I do for transportation.
Next question comes from Catherine Kolkmeyer, goes to Julian Bradley.
The League supports school choice within the K-12 public school system, in which tax dollars do not go to private schools, and in which all schools receiving public funds meet the same accountability requirements as public schools. What legislative actions would you support to ensure accountability and use of public dollars?
Well, I do, you know, this topic comes up quite a bit with vouchers as well. And I'm one of those people that I wish we didn't have to have vouchers, but I understand why. There are staggering statistics that show in the Milwaukee Public School District where there are more than 50 schools, where more than 80% of those schools are of a minority population, and 80% of those students are under the poverty line. On the statewide testing that we did, we found that less than 8% were proficient in reading. We have to save those students. We have to do something to help them get out of that situation and into a school where they can be better off, in a situation where they can compete. Now, we've talked about statewide expansion as well. I am in favor of limited statewide expansion, meaning if there is a school or a district where we find that it is not meeting expectations or it is failing, then we need to allow students and teachers and parents, rather students and parents, the ability to save their students, get them out of those schools, and move them into a school that is going to be better for them. We are lucky here in Western Wisconsin. We don't have that problem. We have great schools here. So this is not an area where I would want to see that happen. But in any of the districts where that is the case, that's what I would like to see.
I favor school choice, and we have school choice. We have the ability that if you live in the Holman School District like I do, and you choose not to go to Holman, you'd rather go to Onalaska, you can do that, or go to La Crosse. That is a program that I think works very well, and our local schools see a number of people shifting back and forth, not because of quality of education. A lot of times it's maybe transportation. Mom and Dad work in La Crosse, so they'd rather have their kids go to school in La Crosse, for example, and that's fine. That works well. But, you know, my parents who are here tonight went to Aquinas. I went to Aquinas. My wife and I sent our daughters to Aquinas. But we never, ever asked the property taxpayers or the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin to pay for our kids' tuition, because that isn't the right thing. Right now, we just saw some numbers that came out from the state showing what that impact has been in La Crosse County. In La Crosse County schools, that's $800,000 that came out of our La Crosse schools. $200,000 in my school district in Holman, that was money that would have gone to the public school that now has gone to Aquinas, my alma mater, but that is money that in the past has been people paying tuition or scholarships from, you know, generous people in the community, but has not been tax dollars. If you want to send your child to a private school, God love you. You should be able to do that. But you shouldn't expect the taxpayers to do that. Now, some people say, well, this is, you know, it's my money. I'm paying taxes. I should be able to direct it to where my kids go. Well, you know, my parents don't have kids in school right now, but they have to pay property taxes. you know, why can't they say, well, I want my money back because I don't have any kids in school? It's the same argument for the voucher schools. It's just not fair to use property tax dollars to pay or state income tax dollars to pay for kids to go to a school that is a privately funded school when there are great public schools around the state.
I look at this issue and I think about not somebody that comes from your background, but somebody that comes from mine, somebody that comes from under, below the poverty line. These kids don't have the option due to financial means to go to a private school. These are the districts that need the help most. These are the students that need the help most. We put $1 billion into the Milwaukee Public School District, and they're still failing. The schools are still failing there. We need to do something to help those kids. We have mandated that they must get an education. It is not fair. What do you say to the mother of a child who goes to one of those schools that's failing? I'm not going to say, well, that's too bad. I'm going to say help is on the way, and we're going to make sure we can get you out of one of those schools and into a school that will help you be prepared for the future.
I have not heard anybody say, let's get rid of the Milwaukee voucher program. That's been in place for a couple of decades or more. And that program is fine because Milwaukee has special needs, and they have a lot of difficulty with their school system. I'm talking about, and I think the question had to do with statewide voucher expansion around the state, where there are no places in the state of Wisconsin where there are concentrations of failing school districts. So if you live in one somewhere in the middle of Wisconsin where you don't like your school, it's failing, or you just don't like it for any reason, go to the one next door. Doesn't cost you a dime. Doesn't cost the taxpayers a dime that would again get sucked out of their public school system. That is fair. We're providing school choice for people all across the state of Wisconsin, and nobody is saying to end the one in the Milwaukee area.
Sorry, I'd like to respond because there were 8 districts other than just Milwaukee and Racine, so that was 2 of the 8. So there were 6 other districts that were either failing or meeting few expectations. For people that live below the poverty line, it's not exactly, you're not going to be able to get a bus into some of these other districts. So we have to do something that's right for the parents and what's right for the students. That's specifically what I'm talking about. It's about fairness. I agree, it is about fairness. We have a different viewpoint on what's fair. I think penalizing people that don't make very much money and keeping them in a failing school is not fair. And I think they should have the choice to take that money and go somewhere where they can get a quality education.
Okay, the next question comes from Drew Kelly of Wisdom and goes to Steve Doyle.
The presidential campaign has been fairly negative. A lot of people have been turned off by divisiveness of the campaign. What do you say to voters who might be on the fence about possibly voting just because of how beaten down they might be from the political process?
Well, you know, I think that it is important to look at the entire ballot and not just the people at the top. You know, I support the Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton. She's not a perfect candidate. There are things that I wish, you know, she didn't have in her background or positions that I wish she didn't take. But I support her, and I think that she will be a good president. But she's not the only person running. We have, in Wisconsin, we have a U.S. Senate race. We have a state Senate race here in this area. We have the 94th Assembly District race. And I think there are good people all up and down the ballot. So don't stay home. Because if you stay home, the bad guys, whoever the bad guys are, win. If you want to participate in democracy, you show up on election day. You cast your ballot, but you do like people are doing here tonight. You show up, you get yourself educated. You learn about, you know, is Julian Bradley your guy or am I your guy? You know, you can't just say, well, I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican, so I'm going to vote for this person or against that person. Get yourself educated, but you really do need to show up because there are good people. And if you don't show up, and we continue to have the polarization that we have, if you simply say, I hate all Republicans or I hate all Democrats, that is really pushing that philosophy that government is broken and cannot be fixed, and we might as well just wash our hands of it. If we do that, then we're just going to have, you know, election after election where it's going to be the same thing. So that's my answer, is you got to get up and get out and cast your vote.
I agree. I certainly agree. We want people to get out and vote. We want them to get out and vote. Take a look at the entire ballot, all the way from top to bottom. That's probably one of the questions I think we've agreed we get most often when we're campaigning, right? People will ask us about the top of the ticket. But I try to spend my time talking about this race because they have all the money and everybody's talking about what they're going to do. I want to talk about what I can do for the 94th District. There's very few people talking about that, and it's important that I have a chance to express how I can best represent this district. I would encourage everyone to vote. Please go out to the polls. You don't have to vote in every race. I would encourage you to. take the time to investigate and see who's the best fit for you. But as Representative Doyle mentioned, there are a lot of good men and women on the ballot. I would encourage you to take a look, depending on where you live, take a look in your assembly races, take a look at your state senate races, and pick the candidate that most represents your values and who's going to do the best for our community.
Okay, next question comes from the audience. Are there any issues you disagree with your party leadership on? Goes to Julian Bradley.
Sure. 2 years ago, I ran for Wisconsin Secretary of State. When I got into that race, it's an office not too many people are familiar with because it's got very few duties and responsibilities left. When I got into that race, I was not somebody that wanted to eliminate it. I thought, I like accountability. I like being able to say, you know what, we don't like what this person's doing, so we will vote them out. At the time, there was a strong movement to remove the office, to eliminate that office from state government. I got into a pretty crowded primary where the party's platform was essentially to remove the office, and I emerged victorious because I did a great job getting out to the people, talking to people like we've done in the 94th District, and trying to explain why I think accountability in government is great, why I believe that we need to be able to have somebody to hold accountable, and what we can do with the office and what my vision was for that office. The office is still there. In fact, one of the proposals I had was to move it back into the Capitol, and that proposal ended up happening, even though the election didn't turn out as I'd hoped. I'm not going to be somebody that agrees 100% with my party. We've talked about vouchers earlier today, and we've talked about a number of other things, the Secretary of State's race. It's important that we have somebody that goes to Madison with an open mind and is willing to speak with a loud voice to represent the people of the 94th District, and I'll be happy to do so.
There are a lot of issues where I agree with my party, and there's a lot of issues where I agree with the Republican Party, and I'll give you 10 examples of situations where I actually voted with the Republicans on a number of bills. Transportation network companies to allow companies like Uber and Lyft to operate in the state of Wisconsin, allowing U.S. military personnel to carry concealed weapons in Wisconsin, allow out-of-state law enforcement officers to carry concealed weapons in Wisconsin, a battery and threats enhancer that was part of a crime bill, a Wisconsin Consumer Act issue that had to do with people who are brought into court for not paying their bills, limit on the number of food share replacement cards, throwing bodily fluids at a prosecutor, invasion of privacy, capturing images of a nude or partially nude person without their consent, and broadband expansion grants, which was a bill by Representative Vandermeer from Sparta, right next door. And then one that got a lot of attention here in western Wisconsin, pedestrians crossing railroads. The people who can't get to the Mississippi River to fish because the railroad won't let them cross the railroad lines. And so those are just a number of examples where I thought that, you know, the Republicans made a lot of sense on their proposals, and I was very happy to vote with them. I don't vote with Republicans all the time. I don't vote with them most of the time. I say that I'm bipartisan. I don't say that I'm a Republican. I say that I will work together with the two parties. That's really what it is all about, and I don't just say it, as I just explained here, I do it.
Thank you. We're now going to move into the last question. It comes from Martha Kolaski.
Who should I direct it to this time?
Julian Bradley.
All right. So if you get a chance to get to Madison, is there one issue that you would want to champion should you become the next Assemblyman for the 94th?
Absolutely. K-12 funding. That's a top priority. That's why I've made a pledge. I've been very vocal about this pledge. We need to see an increase in funding in K-12 education. It's an investment in our future. It's an investment in our community. And it's an issue that I will champion immediately from day one.
I agree. K-12 funding. And I always like to point out, in my other life, I'm an attorney, and I deal with a lot of people in the business world. If you talk to a realtor, and you ask them, you know, what is it that you hear from people when they're thinking of maybe moving to our area? You know, what's the question that they ask you? And it's always the same answer. What are your schools like? If the answer to that is, you know, they're so-so, or, you know, our schools suck, but hey, you know, it's a nice place anyway, goodbye. I mean, that person is not only not going to come, but, you know, in a lot of situations, it's a person who wants to open a business. You know, create jobs in the community, open a factory or a business operation in the community. So we have to prioritize our schools, and in particular our K-12 schools, because they benefit everybody. Not everybody is right for college. Not everybody is right for tech school. There may be different paths that people take. But K-12 is for everybody, and that really needs to be our top priority. It takes a long time. It took generations for Wisconsin to become known as the highest quality school system in the country. and it doesn't take very long to have that go by the wayside. We don't want to race toward Mississippi. We don't want to compete for who is the also-ran for schools. We want to be one of the best school systems in the country, because that is what will bring people, that is what will bring jobs to our state, and that would be my priority, and it has already been my priority for my first three terms in the State Assembly.
Okay, thank you. We have one time question, one more question from Dustin Lutke. I'd like 1 minute responses on this.
Sure, I'll keep it quick if possible. There's a new look to Wisconsin's elections board, basically. Voter ID is now in effect, although that's withstood a number of challenges. There's a new elections and ethics board. How do you keep elections efficient and ethical in the state?
We pull the money out. I mean, I think that's been the biggest problem, is the what's referred to as the dark money. We have too much money driving our elections in the state of Wisconsin, and when they drive the elections, they drive the legislation that comes after the election. So I really want to have us go back and revisit how we fund elections in Wisconsin, the types of money that and amounts of money that are allowed to be contributed. I think if you take care of that, a lot of the other things are going to fall into place.
One of the things that I was proposing as a candidate for Secretary of State was to match Wisconsin up to many other states where the Secretary of State has the elections board under them. That way, if there's any issues, any problems, it's kind of like our county clerks. We have our county clerks are over elections for each of our counties. We would just have another elected official over all of our statewide elections. That's still a proposal that I would favor, moving from the elections board, or at least moving the elections board to under the Secretary of State.
Okay, we move to closing statements. Let's see, Chairman Bradley goes first.
Thank you, and thank you everybody for giving up your evening and being here with us. We've covered a lot of very important topics here today, and it's clear that in order to keep our state moving forward, we need leadership out of the 94th District. We need a voice at the table in Madison for the 94th District. My opponent is a lawyer, he's a county board supervisor, and currently he's a state assemblyman. He has a lot of power, but the only leading we've been seeing is misleading on your record, Steve. We consistently hear where you say you're going to do one thing, and you've done something else, whether it's been college affordability, whether it's been raising taxes. Those are not the things that we need here in our district. We need somebody that's going to come into the district and be honest with people and say, here's exactly what we're going to do, here's what my plan is, and then stick to it. You call yourself bipartisan, but you've admitted that 98% of the time you still vote with your party bosses, and I understand why, after they've put in over $33,000 in just this campaign. That's almost a year's salary. We know who you're working for, and it's not us. It's not the people of the 94th District. I'm running for this office because I want to work for the 94th District. I want to get to Madison, and I want to make sure that we take care of the people that matter most, which is right here at home.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bradley. Mr. Brown?
When I was in fourth grade, Sister Dolores told us that there's two ways of telling a lie. One is to simply say something that's not true, and the other way is to say something that's partly true but gives people a false impression. For example, when Mr. Bradley said that I said, yes, I vote with my party leaders 98% of the time, in that same sentence, I said, and I vote with Robin Voss, the Republican Speaker of the Assembly, 94% of the time. 94, 98. It's not like it was 98 and 2. So really, when I say that I'm bipartisan, I don't just talk about it. I do it. And, you know, I've heard him say that he will be a voice at the table. I am a more significant voice at the table because I constantly have the Republicans come to me, committee chairs and even the leadership in the Republican Party, come to me and say, we want this bill to be a bipartisan bill. Can you join us on this bill? What will it take to get you to vote with us? And I say, change this or change that. And more often than not, we're able to work it out. And so we make a bill that would have been a partisan bill, a bipartisan bill. Doesn't make headlines because it's not the sexy stuff, but it gets it done. That's what I have done in the state legislature. That's what I continue to hope that I will be able to do in the next 2 years.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Doyle. This concludes the debate. I'd like to thank Steve Doyle and Julian Bradley for being here. I think they deserve another round of applause. And thank you all for attending. We'll have a break of about 5 minutes or so before the second debate.